Yankees Files podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of a team that, look, let's be honest, has had a pretty disappointing first half. You know, the Yankees were favored to be one of the best teams in baseball this year, and that's not a standard that they've lived up to this point. They sit currently in fourth place in the AL East and outside of a playoff spot. Of course, everyone around that 49-50 win mark is very compressed. There are a lot of teams in that neighborhood. Their standing could change very quickly, but that's true in both the positive and the negative. You know, they've played a lot of their season without Aaron Judge. They've played a lot of their season either without Giancarlo Stanton or with an ineffective Giancarlo Stanton. They expected, and I expected them to be able to depend on Luis Severino. He hasn't delivered. DJ LeMahieu and Josh Donaldson have been terrible. Anthony Volpe's been fine, but he hasn't been as good as they needed him to be in the face of all the other struggles. Whipple, you know, there's been a lot that's gone wrong, and frankly, it hasn't really shown any signs of fixing itself. With us sitting here at the All-Star break with a team that's out of a playoff spot and needs to see some changes so badly that they just fired their hitting coach mid-season, how are you feeling?
Well, I think the next few days are going to be kind of indicative of how this season has gone for the Yankees, because they're going to have one representative in Seattle for the All-Star game, and I think Gerrit Cole is the only unequivocally positive. Maybe you include Clay Holmes in there because he probably should be in Seattle as well. But when you're talking about your ace and maybe a reliever as being the only completely healthy, completely effective, you know, no negative aspects of their season for both injury or performance whatsoever, if that's it, if that's the summary of your first half, it's not what you want, as Joe Girardi once said. And I think the next few days will be a chance for Yankees fans to reflect and think about what's gone wrong and, you know, the few things that have completely gone right. I mean, listen, like you said, there's a lot of teams bunched up in that middle, you know, end of the wild card, right out of the playoff picture area. But frankly, the Yankees have more talent than them and should have cleared the field, as it looked like they were going to do going into June. And while Aaron Judge's absence is definitely a big part of that, you know, a healthy Aaron Judge on this team doesn't account for all of the other things that you talked about and many more. So I think disappointed should be the word, because you said there are two ways to handle it. You either believe that they're this bad or you root for them to play better. And this is a veteran team that a lot of guys, you know, have a history of better performance. And so while it seems like banging on the same drum, I think it's fair to say, you know, this team should be a lot better than it is. And the fact that it isn't, we are far enough now where, you know, you just have to say that's pretty disappointing. It doesn't mean they can't play better, but every week that they go by and they either lose series to worse teams or they split series with teams that they have a chance to beat in series just puts, you know, buries them a little bit farther and makes the job that is going to lie ahead of them, both when Judge returns, when Nestor returns, and when any trade deadline acquisitions arrive, that much harder. And I'm sure you have a lot to say about the recent news of Dylan Lawson's firing. I definitely have a lot to say. I think the timing after yesterday's game, you know, made it seem like that was the final straw, but it seems like that decision came a few days earlier. And whether you like it or not, I think we can all agree that the results of what happened, is unprecedented in the Brian Cashman era. And, you know, is because of an offense that has been unprecedentedly bad and is pretty much the entire reason for why we're having this type of conversation as opposed to a similar conversation as we did a year ago. I remember we were recording before the Home Run Derby doing our first half review, and it was a very positive conversation because that team had just as good of a pitching staff and an offense that played up to its potential. So nothing but disappointment right now. And, you know, whether Lawson was the correct fall guy or not, the results speak for themselves. This just isn't how the Yankees should be hitting the ball based on what they can do.
Yeah, it's been really disappointing. And let's start with Dylan Lawson. I am frankly baffled by everything that went down with the hitting coach situation. The team hasn't hit well this year, but okay, so let me start with my general opinion about coaching. It doesn't matter that much. If you think the reason that a team of world-class professional athletes is failing is because they're receiving insufficient instruction, I don't have much to say to you. And it seems to me like the Yankees would agree with that, given that they're, you know, an organization made up of pretty smart people, I would think. But firing the hitting coach mid-season because, like, DJ LeMahieu and Josh Donaldson are bad and Anthony Rizzo hasn't hit a home run in a month seems like a weird thing to do to me. And I know you have your own thoughts about it. I think the Yankees front office wants to be perceived as showing a sense of urgency. And this feels like an easy way to do that. You take someone out who realistically doesn't have much of an impact one way or another, and you kind of throw the fans and the media some meat. Not to say it was done for the fans and the media, but the front office wants to project a certain type of image. And because they can't make a trade on July 10th, the way they project an image of urgency is by making a different type of personnel move. And the type of personnel move they decided to make was firing the hitting coach. And I think people are going too far by saying, oh, by firing Dylan Lawson and hiring Sean Casey, and I have a lot to say about Sean Casey, the Yankees are signaling a departure from the analytical philosophy that has failed them year after year. Like, that opinion is so, so bad. And you're dumb if you have it. But I'm so baffled from an organization that at all times wants to project stability, I would say. This reeks of desperation and just like it feels very un-Yankee-like. It is not the MO of a stable organization to make a move like this at midseason. I mean, I think back to the Kevin Ollie years at UConn when everyone knew that it was going to be over for him after the 2017-18 season. He was still not fired midseason. I think about, Notre Dame going 4-8 in the 2016 college football season and making very, very, taking a very, very long time to fire their defensive coordinator when people were out for blood and not changing head coaches. It's very unusual for this to happen. And obviously it's the first time in the Brian Cashman era that it's happened. And it feels a lot to me like scapegoating.
Yeah, I agree with you in part and disagree in part. I think the biggest thing for me is that while the act of firing a coach midseason is unprecedented, Brian Cashman and the Yankees have shown that they're completely willing to make hitting coaches the scapegoat. I mean, Marcus Thames was the ultimate scapegoat for an offense where, 2 years earlier he had overseen one of the greatest offenses in league history. So that part of it doesn't feel crazy to me. I think where I disagree is with the sense of urgency. I think there's definitely a sense of urgency. I do feel that if there was only a sense of urgency and Dylan Lawson was beloved in the clubhouse by all members, I don't think this would have happened. There must have been something, in my opinion, that was so far beyond, or maybe just far enough beyond, what was acceptable, combined with the poor offensive performance that pushed there to be a change. And maybe Brian Cashman is just, viewing this with new eyes after 25 years, but I just don't believe that his philosophy changed that much. I think there must have been dissatisfaction in the clubhouse. I mean, Aaron Judge 100% had to give his blessing on this. His first year as a captain, we already know he's being consulted for major decisions. What probably wasn't his decision entirely. I don't think he went and said, we need to fire Dylan Lawson. There's no doubt in my mind he at least had to give his input on it. And everything that's been coming out about Lawson, no, I don't think the comments in the media really had any impact. But now that, you know, viewed in retrospect, and especially with the Anthony Volpe situation, which, again, probably was made too much of, but now makes me think maybe that was kind of the right angle where, you know, the coaching that Volpe was getting wasn't sufficient and the whatever happened with Austin Wells was embarrassing enough. That combined with definite dissatisfaction from members of the team combined with the performance leads me to believe that that was the reason or one of the reasons. I don't think they were throwing anyone red meat. That's not how this team operates, but I think there was major behind the scenes issues with Lawson. I don't know enough about what's going on in the clubhouse. None of us do really, but the one thing I almost can guarantee is that players, you know, definitely Judge, maybe other players had to have issues with the way Lawson was coaching or his personality, because Aaron Boone is a player's manager. He's running, you know, a very player friendly clubhouse. And while Brian Cashman doesn't report to Aaron Boone, Brian Cashman is standing behind Aaron Boone and has reinforced his support for Aaron Boone. So this isn't a decision that undercuts Aaron Boone in any way. This is an issue with Lawson himself. And that's why I think that was the reason or impetus behind this.
So I mean, I think it's hard to say that. Just as we discussed during the episode on accountability, and I'm sure a lot of people see this as accountability. Just as we discussed on that episode, we don't know what's going on in the clubhouse. So I don't think it's fair for us to say Dylan Lawson must have been some issue between Dylan Lawson and the clubhouse that led to his dismissal. Because again, we can't know that. Just in the same way that I can't know that this was a move made out of desperation by the front office. But what I can say is I don't think the simplest explanation is that Dylan Lawson was some sort of, you know, interpersonal issue or, you know, given that they moved on to Sean Casey, philosophical issue between Dylan Lawson and the players, because like, I don't know what makes that more likely than the fact that, or the thought that the Yankees have the worst offense that they've had in a while. So they got rid of the guy that people perceive as being responsible for the offense. Like why is what you're proposing more likely?
Because why didn't the Yankees fire Marcus Thames midseason in 2021? I mean, they've had instances before where, you know, why wasn't there a pitching coach change in 2019? I think we've seen instances of one aspect of the Yankee baseball struggling at midseason, and this has never happened. And I don't think there was an interpersonal issue. I wouldn't go that far because, like you said, we don't know. And I'm not going to say that I know anymore. But what I feel like I can at least perceive is that the players were not happy with him. And I think that in conjunction pushed it past a point where, you know, 2021, I don't think the way the players viewed Marcus Thames in 2021 and the way the players viewed Dylan Lawson in 2023 was similar, even though there were both struggling offenses. And that might have been the impetus needed, or the way maybe Aaron Boone viewed him. I mean, I just think there was some other factors beyond poor performance.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Right. Yeah. None of us are going to know for sure. I mean, this is all speculation.
So let's talk about Sean Casey. Sean Casey is an MLB Network analyst who is a former player who had a 109 career WRC plus, and like got on base kind of a lot. Those are all his qualifications. He's never been a major league hitting coach or anything like that. He was just like a kind of good hitter who was a friend of Aaron Boone. And I watched one of his podcasts. He has a podcast called The Mayor's Office with a guy named Chinch. I don't know who Chinch is. And it was about how batting average and runs batted in are really important. And I want to play you a clip from it because a lot of people like this. It's currently blowing up on our Twitter. But my concern is that Sean Casey is fundamentally wrong about what helps teams or what makes teams win in the playoffs. So take a listen.
The guys that have a high batting average, they hit good pitching. They hit your ones, they hit your twos, they hit your closers. Okay? Now, the guys that don't have a good batting average, they hit your fours and your fives. And they hit your middle relief starters that come in for mop-up work. Okay, now come postseason time, guess who you're facing, dude? Mm-hmm. You're facing the ones and the twos, and you're going to see them again for games five, six, and seven.
Yes.
That team that's there has got an unbelievable bullpen because bullpens matter over 162. They're the best players. So all of a sudden, what do you see when postseason time comes? The teams that can't hit, that have great OPS guys with low averages, they're bumped. They're out in the first round. The guys that rely on the home runs, those teams, they're out. Mm-hmm. The teams that can hit and play good baseball, move runners over, get runners in, because runs are at a premium. So
my question is, has Sean Casey been watching postseason baseball? Like, he has no idea how teams win in the postseason, right? Like, what is going on here? This is a guy who literally gets paid to pay attention to baseball, right? And he is apparently completely unaware that teams that score a high percentage of runs via the home run in the playoffs win. Going into game, I think it was 3 or 4 of the 2022 World Series, Houston had scored 66% of their runs via the home run in the playoffs. What did they do? They won the World Series. Teams that out-homer their opponents went 23-6 in the playoffs last year. It was 25-2 in 2021. Sean Casey is living in this fantasy world where, and a lot of people live in this world, A-Rod lives in this world too, notably, where in order to be successful in the playoffs, you have to like bunt and hit sack flies. And it's like, no, dude, actually you're wrong. And the reason the Yankees have failed in the playoffs is not because they have failed to bunt and hit sack flies. It's because they failed to hit home runs. And it disturbs me and bothers me that the guy who is going to be instructing the Yankees on their hitting approach, ostensibly to the extent that coaching matters, is a guy who doesn't understand where good teams get their runs from. Like, that's extremely concerning to me.
I mean, I don't think you can say coaching doesn't matter and then criticize Sean Casey's approach. I think
I can say that I doubt coaching matters, but if it matters, this is the wrong kind of instruction I want guys to be getting.
Do you really think that Sean Casey's going to walk into the room with Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, Giancarlo Stanton, and start telling him to bunt and not hit for power? I mean, these are veterans, and I think that's my opinion. Why I think coaching matters in a longer, like, macro sense. Player development definitely matters. But if you're walking in, this is probably the example where coaching matters the least, because you're walking into an already established clubhouse. You're not going to suddenly change the way these guys play. And newsflash, these guys aren't even good playing that way because they're slow and they've hit for power their whole career. Like, the Yankees are going to be successful if they hit home runs. They're not hitting home runs. So Sean Casey can say all he wants. I don't think he's going to suddenly – the offense is struggling, so I doubt he can make it worse. Maybe he can, but that would be very, very hard. And two, I don't really think he has that power. I think – for me, I'll just share the way I view this is based on how I feel that Dylan Lawson had whatever or issues with guys. I think Sean Casey is a new voice who, you know what, if he lets people think there's some element of change, if he lets guys relax, if he just has a different voice talking to someone, then that's a positive in my opinion. And if not, then that's okay, because these guys aren't going to benefit or be harmed that much from Sean Casey. I mean, the assistant hitting coaches are still there. They're not going to suddenly change their organizational philosophy on a dime. And even if they did, the guys aren't going to just change their approach on a dime. I mean, this isn't a video game. Like, that's not how this works. In the long term, if the Yankees say, oh, you know, we want to remodel our whole organization around the way Sean Casey presents information mayor's office, then that's different.
This is what's concerning to me. Look at the moves they've made: Brian Sabian, Omar Minaya, and now Sean Casey. Like, the Yankees to me are sending a message that they think they need to be more old school, for lack of a better term. And I think the Dodgers, the Astros, the Braves, the Rays all contradict that. Like, I said it to you, I've said it on Twitter, if the Yankees have the most nerds, they need better nerds. And if the Yankees have the best nerds, they need more nerds. Like, the problem with the Yankees that a lot of people perceive, and I don't think you're one of these people, is that they lean too heavily into analytics and it blew up in their face, and Joey Gallo is the personification of that explosion. And, you know, now they are starting to claw back and, you know, lean into the old school, and we should be happy about Manaea and Sabian, and Sean Casey is a move in the right direction. Like, that, if that were the case, and I'm starting to worry that that's the case, then the Yankees are going to be bad.
I don't worry about that at all, because there is no way the same organization that hired Matt Blake and completely revamped their whole pitching development system and now churn out incredible pitchers on a dime is going to sit in the Stone Age and realize, you know, or have this perception about what hitting should be. And I don't think Brian Sabian and Omar Minaya are going to dictate that. I think the Yankees need to find the Matt Blake of hitting. I 100% agree
with
you.
They do.
I don't think, and I'm glad that they're not trying to do that right now, because I just don't think that's a winning proposition to do, you know, to do it on a dime in midseason. But eventually they need to do that. They need to get their hitting where their pitching is, because everybody complaining about the Yankees for the last 3 years has only complained about the hitting. And, you know, criticism of pitching has been existent, but pretty quiet. And that means it's working. That means the analytics, the pitching development, leaning into stats, hiring nerds, it's all worked on the pitching side. And so analytics is not one thing for hitters and another thing for pitchers. And you've talked about it before. I mean, analytics is learning how to get better and then getting better. And that's what the Yankees need to do for in the hitting side. Whatever Dylan Lawson did, maybe it worked on some level, maybe it didn't. But obviously, like, they want to change, and obviously it didn't work well enough in this current major league form. The last thing I would say is that I just don't see, like, I guess my thought would be, if there's some Brian Sabian, Omar Minaya driven move towards old school, small ball, whatever, we would see that manifest in who the Yankees are getting. But not that they've acquired a ton of hitters, but it seems with the guys that are on the team right now, I mean, Jake Bauer is looking for someone with a high exit velocity, kind of trying to maximize that power. I think at least he's an example of the Yankees still looking for their organizational philosophy and hitting the ball hard, looking for launch angle, all things that are good, all things that are positive, not something that should be completely abandoned with whoever the next hitting guru is. But if there was, you know, some shift in the other direction, I feel like that would manifest more, and I don't think it will. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I doubt the Yankees are going to go out and acquire, like, Whit Merrifield at the deadline.
I don't know. They traded for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Right, but that was pre-Sabian Manaea, so.
Oh, my gosh, dude. I've been scanning our Twitter during this discussion, and people apparently are... Sean Casey has apparently convinced people that home runs are not the thing that win playoff games. And I'm exhausted with baseball discourse. Like, I don't even know where to begin. Like, do people really think home runs are bad? Like, this guy said, oh, well, they out-homered the Cubs yesterday and found a way to lose. Yeah, like, every so often it happened. Did you see what they had to do that?
Right. Well, I think the first few innings were a great example. The Yankees had multiple guys on every inning collecting singles.
Yeah,
and
at one point,
you
the
know,
Yankees
you, when
were
you get
six
the three
for
singles,
18 and had scored one run.
Right, because when you get two singles in an inning, it's really hard to always get the third single if that's all you're going to be hitting is singles. I mean, the Yankees need to hit home runs in the playoffs. They need to do that because, one, that's how you win. Two, that's the team they have. If you're going to hit singles and have ridiculously slow guys at half your positions, you're going to lose the games. And if they want to trade those slow guys and blow up the team, then, you know, they're probably making a mistake on multiple levels. I mean, anyone, I guess another thing that I've heard with this iteration of the team is that it's a lost season, trade everyone, which is ridiculous when you look at where they are in the standings. But if you trade everyone, you're not going to get that much in return. You're decimating your team. Trading a guy like Rizzo, trading a guy like Stanton right now, like, you're killing the clubhouse. You're lacking proven veterans who can hit home runs. Like, that's not the approach. You would do much worse as a team, I promise you, if you traded four of your nine starting players. Like, now you'll do worse now. You'll do worse next year. You'll probably do worse the year after that. The Yankees know that. They're not going to do that. They've never done that. And it's a ridiculous thing to say, because I think it comes in tandem with the, you know, you need to hit less home runs. It's, you need to hit less home runs, you need to bring up the young guys, and you need to trade all the old guys. That, like, there's clearly a middle ground there, and that is so far from it.
Yeah, people, again, just exhausted with baseball discourse. Should we talk about midseason awards? I think that's what I want to do.
I think so,
too. Okay, so you guys will remember that before the season, we predicted who would win various awards for the New York Yankees this year. So we had MVP, Cy Young, Reliever of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, and Breakout Player of the Year. And then we had who would lead the team in home runs, runs batted in, batting average, OPS, WAR, wins, ERA, saves, and we each made five bold predictions. We're just going to check in on how those are going versus who is leading in those categories at midseason. So Whipple, I think I'll let you take the first two, MVP and Cy Young, because I have to imagine that we both have the same guy in mind for those.
Yeah, so I think when...
And he's starting the All-Star game.
So in terms of who is most valuable to this Yankees team, I think it is very clear that Aaron Judge has been, like, the obviously, like, had a great first 2 months, but without Aaron Judge, the Yankees are a completely different team, both in, you know, dynamics, both in how they're hitting. Clearly, one guy can have a large impact, and I think Aaron Judge has proven that. But Aaron Judge has also missed a month, and most valuable player should probably reward the guy who has added the most value over the first 3 months. And if Aaron Judge was playing, again, I think that award had gone to him pretty much every time we did this. I would have no problems giving it to him again, but it's hard for me to give it to a guy who's missed about 5 weeks of baseball, even though, again, clearly proven himself as the most valuable. But the guy who's starting the All-Star game, when he pitches, the Yankees are 14-5. And, you know, when you're nine games above 500 just in those, just in his starts, and in the rest of your games, you're something worse than that. It's pretty clear that Gerrit Cole is the most valuable player of the 2023 Yankees coming into the year. And I guess first two awards. I mean, he's going to be the Cy Young Award too.
Yes. Yeah.
So
he may win the actual Cy Young Award.
Yeah. And preseason bold prediction, not to toot my own horn, but Gerrit Cole was a pretty clear candidate for a regression to the mean, given that he allowed a league-leading 33 home runs last year, but had an expected ERA a lot better than his actual ERA. And Gerrit Cole has actually done a lot worse than he has last year. He's walked more guys. He struck out less guys.
Struck out fewer guys.
His whip is about a percent or a tenth of a point higher, but he's allowed a lot less home runs. He's kept the ball on the ground more, and he's prevented runs better. And sometimes, like, baseball's, I'm not going to sound old school, but if your ERA is 2-something, I'm not going to go out there and criticize you. Gerrit Cole has pretty much given a quality outing in every single time that he's taken the ball. He's given the Yankees length, and when the starting rotation is as decimated as it's been, and the bullpen has had to be so, they've had to rely on it so much, it really helps to have a guy who can turn around a losing streak, can throw 6 to 7 innings, pretty much guaranteed. I think the other MVP of the season would probably be like the bullpen as a whole, but the reason that the bullpen has had half a chance to do as well as it did is because Gerrit Cole has gone out and been every bit of the ace the Yankees have needed him to be. And it's funny to me that he's regressed in some areas, but kept the ball on the ground, giving up less home runs, because it kind of goes to, like, again, what we're talking about before with home runs. The object of hitting should be to hit more home runs, to score more runs. The object of pitching should be keep the ball on the ground, keep the ball out of the stands any way you can, because as you can see with Gerrit Cole, it doesn't take superhuman statistics. You know, you don't have to strike out an insane amount of guys. You don't have to walk zero guys. But if you can keep the ball out of the seats and you can keep, you know, guys from scoring, like, you're going to have a pretty good season. You're going to be one of the best pitchers in the league. And for a guy who has been called overrated at a lot of times of his career, specifically at various points last year, it's really cool to see Gerrit Cole be probably the highlight of the first half 2023 Yankees, and completely deserving of his All-Star game start. I was joking that it's definitely a bit of a monkey's paw situation right now, because I've been on this podcast so many times talking about Gerrit Cole, and I think this year I've gotten everything I've wanted with him. Unfortunately, it's come at the cost of a completely functional, you know, 24 or 25 man roster minus him. But, you know, at least I'll take my mini victory lap, even if it comes amid a dark cloud of shame. That it might be my curse, but, you know, I'm going to enjoy it, at least in my selfish way.
Yeah. It does feel a little bit like you made a deal with the devil to curse the Yankees.
If we're going to call the Whipple curse a thing, like, I will own it in this case. Okay. This is 100% my fault, and I'm really sorry, everyone, but I'm having a great time.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you have that, because, yeah, Gerrit Cole has absolutely been this team's MVP and Cy Young winner to this point in the season. I will point out, though, innings adjusted, Clay Holmes has been 50% more valuable than Gerrit Cole.
That's what I said at the beginning. I think Clay Holmes might be the runner-up in both categories. He's done that good.
Clay Holmes is he's tied for like seventh in reliever WAR this year, and he has fewer innings than all but two people who are ahead of him. He hasn't allowed a home run. He's striking out, you know, 11.6 guys per nine. What does hurt a little bit is Aroldis Chapman is fifth in the league in reliever WAR. That's bound to change, though, as we all know. But Clay Holmes has been really cool. But yeah, it's got to be, you know, Gerrit Cole's been the MVP of this team. In spite of the fact that Aaron Judge is having a monster season, Gerrit Cole has been the Cy Young of this team, in spite of the fact that Jonathan Loaisiga is having a monster season. And now we can get into, in spite of the fact that Clay Holmes is having a monster season, now we can get into the stuff that I was wrong about. I tweeted earlier that we're going to do a podcast today and we're going to talk about all the stuff that I was wrong about at the beginning of the season. And this is where we get into it. My reliever of the year, it's obviously been Clay Holmes. There's nowhere else you could even think about going with it, in my opinion, with the recent struggles from Mike King, is Clay Holmes. Whipple, do you disagree with that?
No. Okay. I mean, I can't say anything, but he's been that good.
At the beginning of the season, yeah, I predicted that it would be Jonathan Loaisiga. Jonathan Loaisiga, I think, has appeared in 3 games. That was tough.
I got to look who I predicted. I also said Loaisiga, so I'll take my place on the podium.
Yeah, so we were wrong about that. Who was your rookie of the year, Whipple? I bet it was a better pick than mine.
Preseason or right now?
Preseason.
I said Volpe.
Okay, so you said Volpe, and it's been Volpe. I think we would agree. I said Davey Garcia. Why did I do that?
You were very high on Davey Garcia, and I bought in. I love the energy. I was doubtful, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to go with your gut, and I appreciated it.
Give Davey Garcia more chances. He has a 1.59 ERA. But let's talk about Anthony Volpe. So Anthony Volpe started really hot. He started a little cool. Then he had a really hot stretch, and then he had like an ice age. But then he did something cool, which was from the chicken parm day, the first day at Citi Field, to the third game against Baltimore, he had a 184 WRC plus over 74 plate appearances. And that raised his WRC plus on the season from 67 when he stepped into Citi Field to, sorry, it got into the 90s, to 93 before game four against the Orioles. And then he only has one hit in his 16 plate appearances since then, but he's been hitting the ball hard. He obviously hit a home run in the final game of the series against the Cubs. He's been a, I would say, better than advertised defender at shortstop. I mean, compared to what we were kind of told to worry about, he's been extremely good by DRS and slightly above average by outs above average. And, you know, Steamer and depth charts both think he'll be just about a league average hitter for the rest of the season, which, with his combination of speed and defense, I think we ought to be excited about. You know, he's going to scare 25 home runs and 30 stolen bases for a guy who's still figuring out to hit when he's not hitting the ball out of the park and still figuring out, you know, just his complete offensive game to give you that, I think is pretty exciting. And look, the Yankees haven't had a lot to write home about on the position player front this year. Anthony Volpe is second in position player WAR on the Yankees. Now, does he have 126 more plate appearances than Aaron Judge, and does he still trail him by 1.4 WAR? Yes, those are both true. But, you know, he's second on the team, second.
Yeah, I mean, not only does he have, is he second on the team in WAR, he's tied for second in home runs. And, you know, this is a team that has a lot of guys who can hit the ball out of the park.
It doesn't have a lot of guys who are hitting the ball out of the park.
But let's take this as a positive reflection of Anthony Volpe. The fact that his power is, I think, everything that was advertised and more. I mean, for, as you said, for him to be in a position to get 25 home runs, 30 stolen bases as a rookie, I mean, that's a power speed combo that, you know, is pretty rare. We saw a taste of it in the minors, but that part of it's translating to the majors. I think what I'm excited for is when he combines that fearlessness on the bases that he had early in the season with, you know, a better hitting ability that he's showing now and puts it all together. But that's just young player development. And we've seen the flashes, and they're not just even flashes. I mean, the extended stretch of excellent hitting that we saw from him makes him one of the highlights, if not, you know, I think the most. I mean, Aaron Judge is great. You expected this from Aaron Judge, but I think the Anthony Volpe last month has been probably the most unexpected part of the Yankees hitting season, just because things were pretty bleak a month and a half ago. I mean, we had a few conversations on this pod that were like, do you send Volpe down? No, seriously, do you send him down? Like, it's actually getting bad. What do you do? And I'm glad that our view that you probably keep him up and the Yankees' confidence in him was rewarded, because you're starting to enter some pretty bad territory. And he's a 22-year-old shortstop who's in his rookie year in the best baseball league in the world. Like, this, slumps are going to happen. But Anthony Volpe, as a positive contributor to the Yankees with a lot more untapped potential, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I think Volpe is maybe the you know, thing that has shined the brightest in this first half, at least in this last month. You know, there have been a lot of things going wrong for the Yankees, and I don't expect Volpe ever to be a guy who truly carries the team. I don't think that's who he is offensively. But to have a stable and steady presence from Anthony Volpe over the last month has definitely been valuable. You know, it hasn't been the best time for the Yankees, but where would they be if Anthony Volpe had continued to be a 67 WRC plus hitter since June 13th instead of the 150 that he's been, I think is the question you ask. And, you know, it's such a complete approach. Like, for a guy who's as young as he is to be walking 9% of the time in the last month, to be hitting 300, 364, 538, like, the slug is there. The BABIP is high, but he's fast. Like, it's just nothing about what it looks like when Anthony Volpe plays well is concerning to me. I don't think he's, you know, a 300 hitter and a 538 slugger, but you can see what it looks like when Anthony Volpe goes on a hot streak and talk yourself into the, you know, 250, 335, 450 version of Anthony Volpe. And that would be more than fine with the, you know, speed and defense that he brings to the game. So an exciting rookie of the year and a guy who I'm excited to continue to watch develop.
Yeah, I agree. And I look forward to, you know, as the Yankees advertise the Peraza Volpe infield of the future. I mean, you know, the impact it might have on this year's team, those two players playing together, obviously unsure, but I hope we get that middle infield in the future, because what we've seen of Volpe and what we can see of Peraza makes it a pretty dynamic middle of the infield. And the Yankees, you know, they've had some...
Don't talk about Gleyber Torres that way.
Well, I mean, we could talk about Gleyber Torres, but...
We can talk about Gleyber Torres at another time. My comeback player of the year pick was Giancarlo Stanton, and he's been bad. 163 plate appearances of 90 WRC plus ball from Giancarlo Stanton is pretty trash. He walks less than Anthony Volpe. His strikeouts are actually way down from last year, but he is a statue. So, you know, the 214 BABIP, it should go up, but it was super low last year. It's super low this year. He needs to hit the ball out of the park more. You know, 9 home runs in 163 plate appearances, nothing to write home about from a guy like Stanton. He does have a 136 WRC plus in his last 48 plate appearances, which goes back to the third game of the series when they hosted Texas. But, you know, he's going to need to do something that looks like that for a lot longer to get back to where he ought to be for this season and to earn that comeback award. Right now, I think you got to give it to... And I'm surprised that these words are coming out of my mouth, but you might agree, is right now is the comeback player of the year Isaiah Kiner-Falefa?
I actually had a different one, but it's a very valid
pick. Oh, is it Jake Bowers? It's probably Jake Bowers.
No, but that's also a valid pick. I had Tommy Canley, because Tommy Canley has been...
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Unfortunately, unfortunate timing just because of the, you know, what happened yesterday. But those weren't earned runs, so Tommy Canley keeps That's his true. 0.00 ERA. And Tommy Canley has pitched more innings this year than he has since he left the Yankees in 2021 and 2022. And in his time this year, he's been great. I mean, he's been absolutely nails, and I'm super excited that he's back dominating out of this bullpen. I think he's going to be an important part of the second half. It's allowed the Yankees to handle some Mike King regression and to ensure that, you know, Clay Holmes has a setup man or a seventh inning man who's just as dominant as him. I think Tommy Canley has been everything the Yankees asked and more. I don't know if he's a better or worse comeback player pick because he's only been pitching for a month and a half, but he's just been awesome and so easy to root for. So I think comeback player... Given, you know, the lack of innings he's pitched, I feel like this is up there with IKF or Bowers, but both good picks as well.
Yeah, I think Tommy Canley is actually probably the right pick, and he's been awesome, and he has incredible vibes. But Jake Bowers, I think is terrific. He's walking like 12% of the time. He's got a 114 WRC plus. He is, of course, on the IL, and we don't know when he's coming back because that's what happens when a guy is good for the New York Yankees. The Yankees probably would have liked it more if we were talking about Josh Donaldson or Giancarlo Stanton in this award, but, you know, such is life. The team hasn't been very good, so we're talking about Tommy Canley, IKF, and Jake Bowers. My breakout player of the year was Greg Weissert. And that was wrong. Greg Weissert has hardly seen baseball, in the big leagues this year. And when he's been up, he's been relatively unimpressive. You know, he's another guy from the Albert Abreu school of like the tools are there. But he, you know, has not figured out how to locate his pitches while maintaining his nastiness. You know, he can either throw the Adam Ottavino frisbee slider that moves 50 feet, but not locate it. And then when he goes into the strike zone, he gets shelled or he, you know, hits and walks guys. So, you know, such is life. Greg Weissert, I still believe in you. This is actually where I went with Jake Bowers. He absolutely came out of nowhere. He has given life to the Yankees offense in a number of games this year. He completely, you know, he completely changed his profile. He had never hit at this level. He had never hit this productively at this level before. And especially for a guy who's playing out of position in the outfield, you know, not taking those struggles to the plate has been terrific. He's given the Yankees some nice lefty pop, and he's certainly not where I was expecting production to come from this year. So good on Jake Bowers, my breakout player of the year. Who is yours?
So preseason, I had Harrison Bader, and I
think he's the other option.
Yeah, I don't feel like he's entirely broken out. Maybe it was a weird pick because we saw what he did last year. He won the Gold Glove in prior, you know, to 2022. He's shown offensive ability with the bat. So, like, it wasn't completely out of left field because even so, like, it's not like he's been great this year. He's been very good. He's been incredible defensively. He's had some really clutch hits, but he's not.
And I mean, like, let's be clear, Harrison Bader, the way we talked about Harrison Bader was if he can be a league average hitter, he'll be like a four-ish war player over a full season, and that'll be really good. And to this point, he's been a league average hitter and on a 162 game pace of about four war.
Right.
So like all of that is true. There's just the question of like, is there that extra level, that next level of offense that Harrison Bader can reach? And I feel like we see it in spurts, but we don't see it over a sustained period of time. With that said, on a per plate appearance basis, Harrison Bader has been, you know, the next most productive player on the team after Aaron Judge this year.
Yeah, and with his defense, I mean, it's probably as good of a breakout pick as any. I also was thinking about Bowers because for all the reasons you said, I went somewhere different. I went with a guy who, since May, has actually been really good and I think has turned into a pretty stabilizing force in the back end of the rotation. Clark Schmidt, although he's kind of gotten screwed with run support, since May in 13 games, pitched 63 innings with a 3.43 ERA. Done a much better job specifically against lefties, but just in general, I mean, getting whiffs, giving more length, avoiding giving up, you know, devastating home runs. I think April was pretty bad in a way that we thought he was going to, you know, get banished to the bullpen or the minors and not come back. And now I think he has a reasonable chance to pitch in this rotation for, you know, maybe not into October, but for the remainder of the year. I've been super impressed with the last 2.5 months of Clark Schmidt. And I think maybe preseason we had high expectations, but from what he's done after April, like you can't eliminate those numbers for sure, but his ERA is closer to 4 than it is to 5 now. And he's just been really good recently. I want to give him some praise because, you know, in a season of a lot of down moments and down years, he's stepped up when he's needed to perform. And, you know, given the Yankees a chance to evaluate him in the rotation, potentially as a future option as well, when you're paying Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon as much money as you are, you kind of need a guy who's low cost and effective at the back end. So I'm super excited about Clark Schmidt, and I can't wait to see what he can do for the rest of the year.
Yeah, the emergence of Clark Schmidt has been really cool. He is inexplicably third on the team in pitching war, which you
just as
somehow
I predicted.
But the emergence of Clark Schmidt has been awesome. For him to be a reliable piece as he's been, excluding April, is really exciting. And he's taken a lot of hard luck losses. You know, he's kind of filling the Jordan Montgomery role where he goes out and pitches well and doesn't get any run support. But I think there's a lot to like from what we've seen from Clark Schmidt, and I like him as a breakout pick. I think that's a pick that could look a lot better at the end of the year. So we'll go into stat leaders. Aaron Judge was picked, I believe, by both of us to lead the Yankees in home runs, runs batted in, batting average, OPS, and WAR. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Right now, Aaron Judge, despite the fact that he's only played 49 games, is leading the Yankees in home runs, runs batted in, batting average, OPS, and WAR. So we look really smart there because that was obviously a really hard pick. Did you pick Gerrit Cole to lead the Yankees in wins? I feel like you didn't because you were like, oh, some weird stuff always happens with wins. You picked Nestor, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Nestor, I mean, he has the same number of losses as Gerrit Cole, but he hasn't been around as much. Gerrit Cole, who I picked, is leading the Yankees in wins. Wins are a dumb stat.
That's what happens.
Not
pitch,
not team wins. Team wins are a really good stat. Pitcher wins are a dumb stat.
Actually, analytics say you should try to lose more than you win. So
oh, you're everybody's actually, wrong. I heard that. ERA. I picked Carlos Rodon. I don't feel like that really counts right now because he's hardly pitched. Who did you pick?
I picked Gerrit Cole here. So
yeah, and he
don't bet against Gerrit Cole.
He of course has the lowest ERA of the starters. And saves, I picked Clay Holmes. Who did you pick?
Clay Holmes.
Yeah, and it's Clay Holmes. So I want to get into bold predictions because I made five bold predictions, and there's only one that even has a prayer of being correct now. And I just, I want to review them because it's almost hilarious how poorly I did with this.
And this is going to be fun because I think this might be my best bold prediction year ever. So
yeah, and
the tables are turned. For once, I can be right.
You absolutely destroyed me with these. So my first bold prediction was a two-parter, and one part of it is right. Anthony Volpe will play a significant portion of the season. That part has been right. And we made these predictions before it was announced that he was going to be on the opening day roster. So I said Anthony Volpe would play a significant portion of the season, but would start the majority of his games away from shortstop. What I was thinking there was he would play a lot of third base and Oswald Peraza would be the shortstop most often. That was an awful prediction. No need to dwell on that. I said that Nestor Cortez would be basically as good as he was last year. His ERA this year is like 2.7 runs higher than it was last year. His expected ERA, a little bit better, but the FIP looks bad. The XFIP looks bad. It's not a home runs problem. It's like an everything else problem. He's not striking out as many guys. He's walking more guys. The like third time through the order has been awful. The BABIP regressed way farther than I expected it to. So that sucks. The only one that has a chance of still being correct, Gleyber Torres will still be a Yankee on Halloween. I'm feeling better and better about that one. I don't think the Yankees are in a position where they can afford to deal Gleyber Torres. My fourth prediction was that Luis Severino would start the All-Star game. I think I cursed him. You know, we talk a lot about the Whipple curse. I think I cursed Luis Severino, who's having the worst season of his career. There's not a lot in the peripherals to make you optimistic. I do believe that, like, if you're just looking at a little more than 40 innings coming off an injury, you can't say, oh, well, his stuff is stabilized already, or, oh, well, you know, this is who he is now. Like, I don't think that a guy who in any meaningful sample has never walked more than like 3 per 9 is suddenly a 4 per 9 guy. And I don't think that he doesn't strike guys out anymore. And I don't think that his ground ball rate is going to remain this low, or his home runs per nine is going to remain this high. His fastball velocity is higher than it's been since 2018. So, like, there's a little bit there to grasp onto, but Luis Severino's been terrible. I hate that. It makes me incredibly sad. And then I said Oswaldo Cabrera would start multiple games at 7 different positions, which would make him the first Yankee since Clay Bellinger to even appear in multiple games at every position, or at every position except pitcher and catcher. He hasn't done that, but he has appeared at least at left field, right field, third base, second base, shortstop, and first base. So if you're keeping track at home, that's every position in the infield, 2 positions in the outfield. He hasn't played center field yet. He did in spring training, which is why I made that pick. And he only has 1 appearance at first base. It was only for 1 inning. It was not a start. So I don't think this one is going to be correct either. But given how far off some of the other ones are, it feels a little bit better than it did when I was reading them over earlier. So anyway, yeah, pretty miserable performance by me.
I'm curious how many games Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has appeared at all the positions, because I feel like he might even have a better chance based on his role.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to play first or second, but I'll check it out.
Fair. Yeah. No, I mean, if Oswaldo Cabrera was hitting at all, I think that would have had a better chance, but you might have gone a little too bold.
We've seen IKF year. IKF has, of course, pitched, which was not built into the... Oh, IKF does have an inning at second base, so I was wrong about that. He has pitched, which was not factored into Oswaldo Cabrera discussion, but he has played center field, left field, third base, right field, second base, shortstop, and pitcher this year. So he is only missing first base from the Oswaldo Cabrera positional tree.
You said seven positions. You never said what seven positions. That's, you got to go less bold next time.
I think we all knew which seven positions I meant. But okay.
But IKF becoming Shohei Ohtani was not something on any of our bingo cards.
That should have been one of my gold or one of my bold predictions.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa pitches and homers in the same inning. If you had said that, I would have just you could have done the lottery for me. I think I'm sad that Luis Severino is as bad as he is, because, you know, a Yankee starting the All-Star game, super fun. I'm glad Gerrit Cole is, but it would have been fun if Luis Severino was there too.
It would have made me happy.
Yeah, I think Nestor, like, it was hard to see him getting this bad, and hopefully it's injury related. You know, maybe he has a bounce back, but the Volpe one, I think, is interesting, because I guess I kind of thought there was a good chance of that happening too, and they just stuck with him, and they, you know, have not given Peraza a chance. So, interesting group of predictions. I will also say that, again, this podcast has a extreme history of you being right and me being wrong about things. So I'm going to bask in the limelight here. My bold predictions.
You should.
The first three have a very good chance of being correct. This fourth one probably has a good chance, depending on how certain guys play. And the fifth one, even though it's not probably going to be correct, was very close in spirit. So I'll go through them. The first one, again, the one that I talked about earlier, the one that I'm most proud of, Gerrit Cole winning the AL Cy Young and having the most WAR in the league. Right now, Gerrit Cole leads the league in baseball reference WAR. And I'm going to say, if he leads the league in one of the WARs, I think that counts. I didn't specify, but
I
think that's fair enough. And is a top contender for AL Cy Young. So still a long way to go, but I'm feeling very good about that one. The second one we also talked about, Clark Schmidt being no worse than the third most valuable pitcher in the Yankees rotation. Right now, he's the third most valuable pitcher behind Gerrit Cole and Clay Holmes in F-WAR, and has clearly been one of the, you know, stabilizing forces in the rotation. So I don't know if I feel great about that one holding up. I think the Yankees might look to limit his innings. Maybe he moves to the bullpen.
It's best for the Yankees if it doesn't.
I didn't want it to happen like this. So while I'm happy about it, I will hope that Carlos Rodon, Nestor Cortez, Severino, somebody can pass him and Clay Holmes. But I'll at least take the midseason tip of the cap there. The third one I'm starting to fear might be correct. One of Josh Donaldson and Aaron Hicks will see significant playing time into the end of the season. Obviously, Aaron Hicks is now in Baltimore, but Josh Donaldson is still running out there, and every time he seems to have some kind of injury or seems to be on his last leg, he just hits a homer, and that buys him a few more games. So, I don't know. I would have said at this point he would have been gone, but maybe even before Hicks, but the longer he stays, the more likely. And also, the longer DJ LeMahieu struggles, I think the more likely it is that Donaldson at least sees some playing time on this team. So that one scarily heads towards being correct. The fourth one depends on how you feel about Gleyber Torres and Anthony Volpe for the rest of the... Gleyber Torres and Harrison Bader for the rest of the year. I said the Yankees will have multiple 2020 guys. That's 20 homers, 20 steals. I think Volpe is a pretty good bet to get there. He's at 13 homers and 16 steals right now. Then you have Gleyber Torres at 13 home runs and 8 steals, and you have Harrison Bader at 7 home runs and 8 steals. So not impossible, but probably improbable. But either one of those guys could go. I think Gleyber probably has a better chance, because I just feel like he's going to get to 20 homers and maybe we'll end up stealing a few more bases than we anticipate. But that one is still, you know, on the books. The last one was that the Yankees would throw their first no-hitter since 1999 at home. Obviously, they threw a no-hitter. It was a perfect game. First one since 1999, but not at home. So, you know, while that was an awesome moment and I could have gone even more specific, I did not get that one right. Maybe it will still happen. It would be pretty cool if it did. But I think referencing the words no-hitter in 1999 and getting in that ballpark at least make me feel good about the spirit of it. So I'm going to assume, you know, if barring something unprecedented, I guess not unprecedented, but it would be improbable for a team to throw multiple no-hitters in a year. I think it's a pretty good round of bold predictions. Definitely a lot better than I did last year. And I guess of the group, I feel like the Gerrit Cole one and the Josh Donaldson one are probably the most likely. So, yeah, I'll tip my cap and inevitably be proven wrong when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think it's just very impressive that you, like, you got a lot of that either right or very close to right. And maybe I'm just viewing it through how wrong I was, but I think that's a very, very good round of bold predictions. So Whipple, I mean, we'll be back next week after the Yankees play their series in Colorado. So I don't think we need to exhaust the game to game stuff too much. You know, last week was certainly disappointing. You know, for a week in which they went, oh no, they went 3-4. I was going to say they went 500, but they had a disappointing week. They started off the series against the Orioles really well, then lost two games really embarrassingly. Bats didn't wake up in the first game against the Cubs. They did in the second, and then they had, you know, a comedy of errors, literally and figuratively, in the final game. Just what are your kind of overarching thoughts for the Yankees as we move into the second half of the season? Mine has been the one that I put on Twitter, which was basically, look, either you think the team just is this bad, in which case, stop complaining. They're bad. They're doing what they can. This is how good they are. You could be mad about the roster construction. You can be mad at Brian Cashman for not putting a better team together. But when you watch the games every day, you shouldn't be frustrated because that's just who they are. Or you can say that the reason that you're mad is because you think the team is capable of doing better than this and you can root for them to play better than this moving forward. And that's the side that I'm going to take. I would like the Yankees to be better moving forward than they've been, and I think they will be. You know, the rest of Carlos Rodon's season awaits them after the All-Star break. Aaron Judge awaits them eventually after the All-Star break, as do Nestor Cortez and Jonathan Loaisiga, as do any trade deadline acquisitions they make. And I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about that in the next couple of weeks. It just feels to me like this team's been very disappointing, but also that even if this is the true talent level of this team, they are by no means out of it, and that things could change very drastically with the addition of, you know, a power hitting outfielder and Aaron Judge and maybe an infielder and maybe a depth starter and maybe a high leverage reliever. Like, it would not be weird to just have like a pretty good trade deadline and get Aaron Judge back and go on a tear. And I can't give up hope before seeing if that happens.
Yeah, this team is one game out of a playoff position. And while that's obviously massively disappointing, there's a lot of season left. And we've seen, you know, we've seen good things. We've seen great things from the pitching staff. We've obviously seen a disappointing offense. But what we haven't seen is a team that can't win games. And like Sunday, they're giving, you know, Friday and Sunday, if you want to say, they should have hit better against Jameson Taillon. All winnable games.
They should have.
There's no games that they've been in, you know, maybe when they give up 14 runs to the Orioles, but that happens to even the best of teams. This team has as good enough pitching to be in all of these games. And as long as they have that pitching, even if the bullpen slips up sometimes, they're going to have a chance. Whether they actually capitalize on that chance comes down to all of the offensive improvements they need to make, both internally and externally. So I think I'm on the same page. And I think if you're not on the same page, just look at the fact that they're one game out of a playoff spot, and whether that's what you want out of this team, whether that's what you expected or not, that's where they are. And that's a very easy gap to overcome. And it doesn't take a lot for them to get right back in either the top of the wild card or back in the division, because look at the Rays, who have lost seven in a row. No team in the American League is running over every other team this year. And that hasn't been true. No. That hasn't been true in a lot of years when the Yankees have had much better starts than this one. That hasn't been true when the Yankees have been the team running over other teams in the American League. So, you know, the Yankees have had all measures of success. They've had all types of starts to the year in the last 6 or 7 years. They've started out hot. They've started out cold. They've started out everywhere kind of in between. And it doesn't really have a correlation on what happens at the end of the year. So view this as a blank slate. View these next few days as a reset. And I am excited to see, coming into the series in Colorado and the series in Anaheim, what this team is going to be capable of in the second half, because it needs to be different than the first half for sure, or they're not going to get where they want to get to. But they're fully capable of it. This team is certainly good enough. And if, again, if you don't believe that, then, you know, you know what you can do for the rest of the summer.
So Whipple, before we wrap up here, Home Run Derby is tonight. This episode probably isn't going up until after it's wrapped up, but who is your pick to win?
So I was thinking about this. I feel like Julio's going to be the popular pick, but, you know, I'm probably going to go, and I hate to say it, I guess Alonso is probably another popular one. I feel like Vlad Jr. is going to win. I feel like he's got a swing that's kind of made for events like this. We've seen him go off in this.
You're a bad guy.
Unfortunately.
You're just not a good guy.
But who I want to win, I want Adley Rutschman to win. That would be super fun. You asked me who I thought was going to win, but that's cool. Not who I want to win. So I guess my pick, I'm going to go on the record with the Rutschman pick, and I'll be sad if it's Vlad.
Yeah. So, as you know, for a little while now, and by a little while, I mean a few years, I've had an Adolis Garcia is good narrative. I don't think he's going to win the Home Run Derby, but I think it would be cool. I think that one of the storylines in baseball that has impressed me most this year, and I think has gotten on more people's radars than it was in the past, and, you know, it deserves to be, is just how good Mookie Betts is. I think... Mm-hmm. Mookie Betts is probably the best player who is underrated. Like, this is a guy who, since going to LA, has a 143 WRC plus and 17.4 Fangraphs WAR. He has 4.2 already this year. He had the quietest 6.5 WAR season ever last year, I think, just given all the Judge and Otani stuff. He has 26 home runs right now. I think there's nothing Mookie Betts can't do, and that getting him on the big stage tonight, he will show that off. And I think it's kind of cool that, you know, the guy who is, if not in height, certainly in weight, the smallest guy in the field. I think it would be pretty cool to see him win it, and I honestly, I can't say I'd be surprised if he doesn't, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he does.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that pick. I think it's going to be a fun Home Run Derby. Definitely a lot of... there's no guy that, maybe except for Vlad, that I would be, you know, upset with seeing win. And, I mean, Home Run Derby is always a good time.
I don't want Randy or Rosarena to win. I hate that guy.
If only Otani was in it again, because I feel like that's when it gets really fun.
Yeah, that would be better.
It'll be a good time.
It will be. All right, Whipple, before we wrap up here, any parting shots from you?
Yeah, we didn't do an episode last week, so we missed out on talking about the Herman Perfect game. But I want to talk about, again, a guy who you hate, but I've now seen homer 4 times and plus play for the U.S. national team. Kyle Higashioka, since May 28th, has a 127 WRC plus, and he caught a perfect game. I'm just going to, again, reiterate that he's a really good backup catcher, and I will defend him even if you have crucified him in the last 3 years of this pod. Just nothing but praise for America's backup catcher, true patriot Kyle Higashioka.
Whipple, do you know who caught Dallas Braden's perfect game?
It's not Kyle Higashioka.
Do you know who caught Felix Hernandez's perfect game?
This is a weak form of comparison right
now. Do you know
who
caught
You're better
Phillip Umber's perfect game?
I'm done. First half Yankees Files is over.
It's just like, I'm not doing this thing where we grade catchers based on how many perfect games they've caught. Like, this is ridiculous. Landon Powell caught Dallas Braden's perfect game, by the way. 123 major league games to his under his belt. Yeah, you know what? Kyle Higashioka's had a good month. Where have I seen that before? I'm glad that you saw him hit
a home
run.
Hey, it's the episode
run.
Of me.
I'm glad that you saw him hit a home run.
It's the
run.
Episode of me being...
It's the episode of you being right.
It's the
I
episode
know.
Of...
I know.
Yeah, episode of me being right. I'm sorry, everyone. I'll shut up now.
Shout out E-Money Ethan Olmstead for seeing Kyle Higashioka hit a home run. I'm sure that warmed his heart. People can keep up with us, as always, at YankeesFiles.com. They can keep up with us on Twitter, where we're at YankeesFiles, and that's really blowing up today with some of those Sean Casey clips of him not knowing how wins happen in the playoffs. We're on TikTok at Yankees Files Podcast, and the podcast is, of course, available wherever you get your podcasts. With that, we will wrap up both this episode of Yankees Files and the first half of the 2023 season, and take our own little all-star break. And we'll be back same time, same place next week to recap anything that Gerrit Cole did in the All-Star game and the series that was in Colorado. Until then, let's go Yankees.